You are listening to TechWatch Radio for March 15th, 2014, episode 378. Happy to have you along, my fellow tech enthusiast, sandwichman, Jay Harrison, live on your radio. We always talk tech every Saturday morning. Hope you're doing fantastic. Now, there's all kinds of things that you should know. You know, Sam and Jay love TechWatch Radio, and it's a fun weekend show. It's really a hobby for us. We love talking tech. It keeps us up in the industry. It just does a lot of cool things. It's fun to chat about what's happening and the changes that are being made and what our opinions are of the future, and then it's fun to kind of chart our opinions and projections and ideas for the future versus what really happens in the future. And our guesses are pretty good most times, but you know what? A lot of times there's big surprises in what happens. So we're not always perfect. We don't claim to be prophets of any kind, but it is interesting to kind of say, hey, where's tech going to go? What's the time frame on certain things that are happening? And anyway, it's a lot of fun. Well, we have day jobs in tech as well, just so you guys know, which means that Monday through Friday, normal days, we're on the job during the day, like everybody else. However, the tech industry is a very strange one in the sense that you're always, at least in the positions that Jay and I end up in all the time, you're always on call. And you know what? If things aren't working out right, then you got to work, right? So Jay's with me this morning. He's got me in one ear, but he's also on the line with some tech folks to take care of business for the day job stuff. And it's kind of flowed into the weekend. When things break down or don't work right, then, hey, we got to go to work. That's just the way life is in the tech world. Always on call, so to speak. The beauty is we get a little bit of flexible hours from time to time. So there's good and bad to all fields. And, you know, this is what it takes in tech. I'll be kind of driving the truck alone here. Jay will be taking care of that. Hopefully he'll have that cleaned up here in a couple of minutes and join me. In the meantime, I got all kind of news, though, for you that I think is just fascinating to discuss. And I want to start out with this interesting story. I don't know what you call it. The mainstream press tells the tale slightly different than I think we should tell it. You say, Sam, what are you talking about? Well, there's this interesting story in the news about the United States and the internet. And you say, Sam, what are you talking about? Headlines are all over the map on this thing. But the headline that I have says, United States aims to shed control of internet addresses. The United States government aims to shed control of internet addresses. And so it's a very strange story. We've talked a lot about net neutrality in the past. We've talked a lot about domain names and what it all means. But they say this: currently, the Commerce Department maintains the master database of what are called top-level domains. Okay, you know, like .com, .net, okay, as well as the corresponding internet addresses or numbers that go along with those names. Now, let me kind of step back and explain this to folks that may not know. You know, a lot of times our goal is to put tech on the kitchen table so folks can understand it, right? Now, I know a lot of you high-tech folks are going to go, come on, Sam, we already know all this. I know, but we got to bring folks up to speed, okay? So here's what happens. When you type in sambushman.com or techwatchradio.com on the internet, the computer doesn't care about techwatchradio.com. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. All the computer does is goes to a master database on the internet. It just reaches out and says, hey, somebody typed in techwatchradio.com. And the master database comes back and says, fine, in my table, when you tell me techwatchradio.com, I come back and give you a number. And it's four numbers separated by dots called an IP address. All right, just say, you know, 100.100.100.100 to make it simple. It's really not that easy. It's like 208.65. Whatever. However, so the computer, when you type it in, techwatchradio.com, goes to the database called the DNS server, dynamic name server, gets the IP address, sends the IP address back to the computer that asks for it, and then uses that number to know where to go on the internet. What they're saying is the United States government, the Commerce Department, maintains the master database for this stuff. Okay? But they have contracted out that information now to what's called the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Now, Assistant Secretary of Commerce, Lawrence Strickling, says that they asked ICANN for a formal transition, the goal to support and enhance the multi-stakeholder model and to maintain the openness of the internet. ICANN Chief Executive Fadi Jahari, I don't know how to say it, said the process would be completed before ICANN's management contract with the Commerce Department expires in September 2015. Now, as you know, they say the United States gave birth to the internet. They've been a long time working on handing over stewardship, and they're taking many steps towards that. So what you got here is you got, look, the United States created the internet, right? And they control the names and numbers database. And now they're handing it over to this international group called ICANN. That relates to, you know, controlling the heart of the internet. And they've had it under contract where ICANN has handled things on their behalf. But what they want to do is transfer control to where the United States is not in control of it anymore. Now, question, is that a good idea or a bad idea? And I submit to you that it's a bad idea. All right? And I'm going to tell you why it's a bad idea. And I hate to make this a political kind of a show because this is technology, not politics. However, sometimes, I hate to say this, sometimes technology gets a tidal wave of politics and there's no way to avoid the political ramifications of technological, you could say advancements, but in this case, I don't think it would be an advancement, and that's the point. Okay? The United States has administered the internet quite well. The internet's grown, become more popular, become faster. In fact, in other countries, you got faster access to the internet than we have right here in America. Now, a lot of that has to do with the distances between points in America. It's far. In other countries, it's not near as far. And so you say South Korea, they have the ability to have way faster internet. But, you know, they don't have to connect near as remote or distant locations either. Well, anyway, I digress. I just want to say that the United States has been relatively fair in administering this information. If you turn it over to an international body, and then that international body no longer is on contract with the United States, who has ultimate control, and you turn over the control, it reminds me a lot of what will happen with the Panama Canal. You know, the United States built and had control of the Panama Canal and then later turned it over to other controls, and now we don't have any control over things. And the question becomes, do you trust the United States to maintain a fair and equitable system without playing favorites? Or do you trust an international community to do that where the United States may have one vote at best? And that's kind of the discussion here. And so without making it political, I'm just trying to say that, you know what? Around the world, the United States has been, for the most part, quite fair.
I trust the United States personally.
Quite fair in handling it. Now Jay's actually back. I mentioned that our day jobs sometimes were in tech, Jay. We're 24/7 on call. This is
that's
case
no
in
doubt.
Point, huh?
Absolutely. But we get everything squared away and then we get back to it, you know?
Absolutely. So the quick summary, I'm talking about this. The United States is planning to turn over to the ICANN. That's the international body that controls things on the internet. The ability right. to control the names and numbers.
I think this is a dumb move on our part.
I think it's a horrible
as
move.
Generally as the United States.
Because I'm not saying that the United States is perfect. But I am saying if you're going to talk about being fair and equitable, the United States has a history of doing that around the world. And I'm afraid an international body, a lot of times there's angst or anger, hatred towards the United States. And I'm afraid that we might not be treated fairly if we end up with just one vote. Why would we turn? It reminds me of the Panama Canal. Why would we turn over control of such assets when we know that our chance of administering it fairly will be diminished significantly in hopes that a another entity that oftentimes doesn't have our best interest in mind and has their own selfish interest. Why would we take that chance, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I don't know, but it reminds me of Panama Canal, you know, the UN, all these things where, and before we've had some international sovereignty, or at least the leader in this, and same with ICANN. You know, we invented the internet, really, with DARPA and everything else. The United States invented it. I don't see any reason to turn this control over to an international body. I just, you know, maybe that's too patriotic of me. I don't know, but I think we ought to keep control of it.
I do think that we ought to continue to administer it as fairly as we can and be as kind and gentle and polite to other nations.
Definitely.
If they want to develop their own system that they have control of, they're, you know, knock yourself out kind of an idea. But I think turning it over is a mistake. And I, like I said, I don't like to talk about this too much. But when you get a tidal wave of politics that just smashes technology on the rocks, you're forced to jump into the fray. And this is an example.
Technology and politics overlap quite frequently and more as we just continue to be a more technological society.
I know it's tragic, but true. All right. Anyway, enough of that. I just think they're making a mistake. But they've already contracted out to the ICANN under the Commerce Department right now, but they're planning to turn it over completely to the ICANN. Then the ICANN will no longer be contracted by the United States, which means it becomes completely independent and we lose massive control. I don't see why we would ever do that. It seems to me like a tragedy. The American people are losing a significant, or the taxpayers are losing a significant asset right here that I think is, I'm telling you, we'll rule the day, we'll regret it.
Agreed.
All right. Anyway, enough of that. Just thought I'd tell you that. It's an insignificant thing at first, day to day. You won't even notice the change. However, over time, if it becomes political, and this is the whole reason that I kind of weigh into the politics of this thing, if it becomes political between nations, instantly it will affect you day to day. Because they'll start playing games with things that relate to your simple ability to go to places on the internet that you desire. All right, Google goes rafting down the Colorado River, Jay. Did you see this?
I did not see this,
no. All right, I think it's super cool. Here's the deal. Google goes rafting down the Colorado River with cameras in hand so you don't have to. All right? And they basically are talking about continuing what seems to be a quest to photograph every stretch of space on Earth.
They want Google, to map it all.
Yeah, they took their Street View cameras and technology, and they rolled down the Colorado, well, they rafted down the Colorado River with it. And they say now you can check out a virtual vacation via their, I don't know if you call it Google Earth, giving you one less reason to go outside. Now, Google, I guess they took pictures of or scanned 286 miles of the Colorado River, and it meanders through Arizona's Grand Canyon National Park. That's their latest effort to deliver the world's far-flung and often dangerous places to your screens where you can check them out virtually. And so Google Street View goes down the Colorado River is the point. I think it's super cool, Jay.
I think it's very cool, you know, explore the Colorado River and not even have to get wet or leave your living room.
Well,
you know?
And you know what? A lot of people may not be able to afford or have the health
may
to
not
go
be able.
Or, yeah, whatever reasons, health-wise, affordability, whatever the case, you know, maybe just not love to do it but not comfortable, concerned about the danger, whatever. It's a chance for you
swim.
To be able to see that. Good point. It's a chance to see something that you might never see otherwise, except for, like, still shots or that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I agree. I think it's cool. But until, you know, if Google wants to, like, map out my living room, you know, then I might object at that point. But things like the Colorado River, that's cool.
Yeah, Colorado River is a little different than your living room. They say they got panoramic views with cameras attached to the raft that are later stitched together to kind of give you the layout of what's happening. I think it's
super
cool.
I could just
cool.
imagine, you know, the same rig they put on top of those little cars that run around doing the street view, just mount that on a raft and let it go. I think it's pretty neat.
That's exactly what they've done. It's super cool. The only thing I think is they might want to have people on the raft that would intelligently try to understand what the camera sees and see if you could move your raft different spots in the river to get even a better panoramic view. That would be cool, too.
Yeah, I've not seen a picture of the raft, so I don't know if it was manned or unmanned.
Yeah, anyway, I just found it pretty neat, though, and I think especially if you can get some of the sights of the world, whether it be you know, down rivers or out back in the forests or up in the mountains places, I think it's a cool way that you could check out your Earth from your living room in place. For example, high mountains, you know, that you may not be able to hike yourself. If you could get someone to, or somehow via aerial views or something, get some of the photos of that stuff close up and in depth and panoramic style. That stuff just seems super cool to me.
I think Google, the next project, they ought to drop a lander with a street view on the moon, you know, and just start mapping out up there.
Well, I think we ought to map the Earth first.
Well, I agree with that. And maybe one underseas as well, too, you know?
Absolutely. And by the way, that's why I like Science of the Sea so much, just because it gives you so many in-depth details of what we've discovered. And it just seems like the world is a treasure trove of knowledge and interesting things to learn about and be part of. And this just seems like it adds to it. And so I'm a little less on Google driving down my street and mapping everything. I'm less on that than I am, you know, being able to map some of these things.
Map the seabed.
These things are awesome, yeah.
Sure. You know, the sea is any, it depends on who you talk to, but anywhere between 70 to 75% of the coverage of the Earth itself. And I was reading something recently that said we've only mapped in any sort of even just shallow detail about 3% of the oceans. So, there's a lot of stuff undiscovered there.
See, no question. See, that's just fascinating to me to learn about that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, Google's going to move us a long way towards understanding some of these cool things and taking us places, virtually speaking, that we've never been. I think it's super cool. See, I criticize Google sometimes, Jay, when I think it's warranted, but I also give them a lot of credit when credit's due, and I think this is super cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, you got to like that. See, Jay doesn't know what to do with himself when I start praising Google.
I start getting worried when Sam's like pro-Google. I start thinking the sky's going to fall.
All right, I wanted to bring this up. Prime 99, Jay, did you hear this?
I did see that. So there was discussion about this, and they were talking about it for, I don't know, maybe 6 months ramping up to this. And I got an email in my box, and they said, hey, you know what? When you renew, my renewal's in November. When you renew, it's going to be $99 instead of $79. And, you know, in fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday about this, who's also a very tech guy, and who had recently subscribed. And I'm like, hey, at least you locked it in before they did the rate hike. And, we kind of had a laugh, but... you know, he's wondering, is it really worth it? And I'll have to see. And I'm thinking, you know what, even you're going to raise this from $79 to $99, so it's $20 more expensive. But there's no way that I would spend less than whatever that works out to be, $8 a month on shipping. What I'm saying is it's going to definitely still be of value for me at $99, and I don't think I'm going to be canceling it over a $20 rate hike.
All right, this reminds me of the Netflix debate a little bit. And it almost seems like everybody has this attitude that everything on the internet is supposed to be free. In fact, they almost should pay you to use their stuff, it seems like. People have this attitude. It's crazy.
It's kind of the dot-com bubble, right?
A little bit, yeah. And so here's my attitude. How long has it been since they had it at $79? Like 9 years?
No, I don't think that long. But I know I've been a member for at least 4 years.
I'm pretty sure they said it was 9 years. Anyway... all I'm telling
you
is
they may have had it for a while before I had it, though, too.
Yeah, so. And I know it wasn't near the service that it is now.
Even though I was an early adopter.
It wasn't the service then that it is now either, and that's the point that I want to get at. They've given us more and more for the same price for a long time, whatever the number of years is, at least 4, 5, 6, whatever years. And whenever we give more benefit, everybody's just like, yeah, this is awesome. But whenever we start to say, you know, that benefit really has a cost associated with it, it's time to evaluate that cost, people start to kind of freak out. And the reason I bring up the Netflix discussion about this is because what Netflix did is divide their services in half and charge what they felt was appropriate for those services independently. And everybody freaked out. But I still believe it was a great deal then. They just got a lot of negative press over it. I was frustrated by it a little bit because I felt like they could have incrementally made those changes and it wouldn't have been so in your face.
Right.
Reed Hastings of Netflix made a big mistake on that. However, in the long run, he was right and the proof is in the pudding. And he's got way more subscribers than he ever had before. And overall, he won big time. And separating those services was the digitally smart thing to do. He just should have done it a little more gently so that consumers could adapt. It's kind of like Microsoft going to their Metro view. You know, doing it over several versions to where everybody got comfortable would have been fine. Doing it instantly in your face is the problem. So small moves towards the right direction is the way to go. Well, anyway,
anytime you take that approach of we're going to force everybody to do this, I think it's wrong. You've got to encourage them to do it and almost make it seem to them like it's their choice.
Well, and make it seem like to them that you're giving them value, value, value.
Yes.
Okay, and that's the discussion here. So I don't disagree with this one bit. Now, I think they could have rolled it out a little different. Now, let's say they split up their services. And this is how I kind of come to the understanding and don't have a problem at all, Jay, with them doing this. let's say they divided up their shipping versus their Prime entertainment service.
Right.
Okay. Right now they're bundled together. Let's say they separated them. How much would you pay for their Prime internet entertainment service, Jay?
Very little, because I don't use it that much, really.
I understand. Believe it or not, though, they're gaining on Netflix. They have over 40,000 movies and stuff like that. When we researched this before, it was like 5 or 10,000. Quietly behind the scenes, they've quadrupled their content, sir.
Yes, they have. And I sure hope that this is, and I feel like this is a rate hike because of shipping, not because of internet streaming costs. Because if it is an internet streaming cost, then I'm even more disgruntled because I don't use it that much. And I really am doing this mainly for the shipping. So in that with this is maybe they should have separated out the rates, but maybe. I'm sure that they sat in a, what's that?
How much would you pay for it? For Prime,
for the
entertainment content, whatever you want to call that thing.
How much would I pay for that? I'm thinking. Yeah.
What if they said it was $35 a year, Jay?
No, $35 a year. How much is that?
$3 a month. Less than $3 a month.
Okay, I might do that.
What do you mean you might?
Maybe
do that?
I maybe would do
Come on,
that.
$35 a year, Jay. That. Are you in or not?
No, I'm out.
All right,
$35 a year.
What if I said it's $35 a year, Jay? But I'm going to give it to you for $30. In other words, I'm going to give you like 15%+ off. $30 if you have it with another Amazon service. You in?
I don't know. You're putting me on the spot.
All right. Well, I'm doing that on purpose because the goal is to help people kind of evaluate what it's worth. Now, let's ask the next question. Let's say that I took the digital entertainment piece off the table and I just said, listen, Jay, I'll give you two-day shipping free on anything you buy the whole year. How much is it worth to you? Would you pay $99 for that if I just took the digital entertainment content out of the mix?
You mean would I pay $79 for it?
No,
the original price, right? I probably still would. Yeah, I'd pay $99 for that free shipping.
Okay.
But you know what? I really wish it was everything on Amazon because there's a lot of exceptions, by the way.
There are. And you know what? I'm hoping as they increase the cost, they will decrease the exceptions and give you a better bang for your buck. And if you want my opinion, even if they changed it and said, listen, it's flat out $10 a month, which is $120, but the exceptions are, for the most part, gone. You know, in other words, hey, if you ship a like a car or a washing machine, I'm not going to say that, you know, everything can be included. There's got to be exceptions, right? But I would say even if you were to increase it to 120, which is the top dollar they were talking about back in the discussion days a couple of months ago, I would say that most people would still have a better deal and they would actually save more money overall if that happened.
Well, I think a lot of the exceptions are from people like other sellers that are on Amazon that aren't going through an Amazon distribution. They're shipping direct and they just can't, they just can't ship it like that. Where Amazon, a lot of times they can promise 2-day shipping. And they're not really actually paying for 2-day freight from somewhere. They just have so many Amazon centers. Like for me, they've got one up in Georgia. They can just send it right from there and it's almost guaranteed to be within 2 days.
Yes. So anyway, what I'm trying to do is get people to really evaluate the benefit and the cost. And I guess what I'm saying is people are looking at it in so many different ways, but I don't think they're looking at it fairly. And that's the point why I want to kind of divide out the services and have people think about it. What if I said to you, all right, listen, we're going to keep the shipping $79, but it's only $20 for the digital entertainment. Then would you complain? Quick pause, Science of the Sea, Sam and Jay, TechWatchRadio.com in seconds.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rain fly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip two Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
You are listening to Science of the Sea on Tech Watch Radio.
Exploring Science in the Sea. Coastal residents have always relied on the bounty of the sea to help sustain them, even if that bounty didn't always look especially appetizing. About 600 years ago, for example, residents of Carrageen County in Ireland tried a scraggly-looking red seaweed, known as rock moss. They found that not only was it a good addition to some of their foods, it made a good medicine and fertilizer, too. We're still using the main ingredient of that seaweed today, an ingredient known as carrageenan after the place where it was first used. It's found in food, medicines, shampoo, shoe polish, and many other daily products. Carrageenan is the main component of several species of red seaweed found in Europe, North America, and Asia. Most modern commercial production comes from seaweed farms in the Philippines. Carrageenan is found in everything from ice cream, yogurt, and chocolate milk to peanut butter and salad dressings. It's used as a thickener or as a binder to keep the other ingredients from separating, a role it also plays in toothpaste. And it's been used in medicines that treat coughs, ulcers, and other afflictions. In recent years, some research with laboratory animals and tissue cultures has suggested that carrageenan could cause problems in the stomach or intestines. And European regulators don't allow its use in infant formula. But reviews by the FDA and its European equivalent have concluded that in a normal diet, it's not a problem. It's just part of the bounty of the sea. Science in the Sea, a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, is on the web at scienceinthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
Sam and Jay talking tech. Just got back from Science of the Sea. One of my favorite features is fascinating to delve into the sea. They say we've only mapped out like 3% of the ocean, and we want to go to like Mars and who knows where and check everything out so we can know what's going on. But maybe we got to like stick a little closer to home and, I don't know, put the Google trolls under the ocean, whatever we got to do to learn more about our own Earth. It'd be pretty cool. By the way, Tech Watch Radio is brought to you in part by TetonSports.com. And you can scan their QR codes, ladies and gentlemen, and get product how-to videos, all the product specifications, beautiful pictures, and more. How about even reviews of the product? Yeah, check it out, TetonSports.com. And if you follow them on Facebook and Twitter, you can win free product. That's Teton, just like the beautiful Teton Mountains. T-E-T-O-N, TetonSports.com. Do it right. Indoor comfort, outdoors when you're camping, Teton Sports. All right, so Jay, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but I'm trying to get folks to understand that. Look, you can't just complain about everything. Costs are going up. That's a fact. They've held the line on the cost at $79 for Google Prime for quite some time, and now they're increasing to $99. And I'm convinced if you were to separate out the service and just say, I'll give you the shipping, just like you've always had for the same price, Jay, but the entertainment's going to cost you $20 more, most folks wouldn't complain at all. What they're complaining about is anytime anything changes, they want to complain.
You asked that during the break. Hey, would I pay $79 if they said, you can have it for $79, but we're going to drop the streaming? And I would do that. I would actually take the $79 for shipping only and do that. But, you know, another option I thought about that Amazon should have maybe made available to people, and that is allow people to pay it ahead. Say, hey, we are going to have this rate increase, but if you want to pay, you know, at your current rate at $79, you can buy 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or whatever of service, and we'll let you pay for it now at the current rate before we do the rate hike. I think that's a smart move on Amazon's part. There's a lot of people that would have done that, myself included, and, man, that would have been a pretty big influx of cash for them going forward and capital that they could use.
Amen. It's a great point. And so I'm just trying to get people to understand the different services, to understand what you're getting. Maybe dividing the services like Reed Hastings did might have been a good idea. They could have also just said, you know what? Listen, guys, you can get 2 years for a very limited time if you're already a Prime member for, you know what, $149.95. That would be $75 a year for 2 years. And then you got to go to the new pricing structure, whatever it be. Or they could say, hey, 3 years, so 2 years at $75 and one at $99 or something. So it's $249, but you get 3 years. They would have got 2 years at $75 and the third year at $100 that way. There's so many ways they could have sliced it up. But here's the point that I want to get at. Whether you divide up services, whether you increase fees, whether you, you know, deliver more value, what you've got to do is find out the way to make it the most palatable for the consumer and make the consumer feel like they've got one, time to decide. That's a big key. Time to decide, number one. And number two, then the ability to make choices that fit their expectations and needs and budget and circumstances. And if you do that, you're in good shape. Now, you can't go to the Microsoft plan and make it all confusing to where you don't even know what you want to do.
Right.
But you've got to give people options and give people time. Luckily, my Prime renewed right before this announcement, Jay.
Really? So you've got a whole nother year. You've got the maximum amount of rate hike pricing. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that, though, too, because, you know, we're only in, what, March, and mine isn't renewing until November. So I feel like I'm kind of in that same boat, although maybe not quite as well as you are.
Well, what they could have done, too, is they could have just said, listen, everybody that's currently on Prime, whenever your next year renews, you're going to get that for the same price. And everybody knew is going to be at 99. And when yours does renew, you're going to be at 99 after the original renewal. In other words, yours is in November. Yours would renew at 99, or I mean 79, even though it's way later. But hey, we're going to give you one renewal at the current price. That gives you at least a year if you were to, you know, renew right now, or more than that, just depending on, as a bonus. We love you. We appreciate you. If they did that kind of stuff, I think a lot of people would be cheering. And again, it would only mean $20 for 1 year for the current subscribed users, but it would reward them for being early adopters or being on board. You do that kind of stuff and you get a ton of brownie points, more than the dollar, more than the money that it relates to.
Loyal customers are worth quite a bit.
Yeah. So anyway, but I'm telling you this, and this is one last point on this, then we got to move on because this can take all day. But whenever they increase the price, we can all complain about it, but here's what's really the reality. Whether you make it $99 or $199, the fact is, when they increase the cost, you're going to demand more adherence to what they promise. In other words, two-day shipping, if you're paying more money, you're going to expect two-day shipping. If you're not paying that much and you're happy with the service and it slides for a day or two, you're like, hey, this is a weird exception, no big deal, I won't be that. But I'm telling you, when they up the ante dollar-wise, you're like, eventually, hey, I'm paying for this, and I better get it in 2 days like they promise. Or with the Prime entertainment side of things. You're saying, Jay, I don't really watch it that much. I don't really care. But you know what? Once it starts costing more money and you know it's part of their promised delivery, if you will, you're going to start to say, you know what? They better give me entertainment that I care about and that I can use, or I don't want to pay for it. So as they up the ante dollar-wise, they're going to also up the ante in terms of expectations. And I'm telling you right now, Amazon better be ready for that.
Yes, sir.
So no matter what we say going into this, renewals are going to be based on perceived, and I'm going to say that again, perceived value. If the American people or the people around the world believe that there's value there, then they're going to keep subscribing. And guys like me, if they raise it to 99 and I feel like it's a great deal next renewal, then I'm going to be glad to pay it. If they don't, though, they're going to start losing folks. People are going to go, I'm going to use Jubilee or some other big service that I feel like I'm getting more, bang for my buck back from. Anyway, end of that, but I thought that was interesting and worth discussion. Everybody can't just gripe, though. There's a lot of value in it, and I still think it's worth it, even at 99 bucks, big time.
Agreed. And you know, while Amazon is tweaking with their pricing, so is Microsoft with Office 365.
Great point. Microsoft, we've been beating on them forever to get realistic pricing and less confusion in their systems, in their services, in their products. And, you know, we've laughed at them because they've been so confusing and so expensive that they're not even at the table for most of us for discussions. But they have really made some strides lately that I want to bring to your attention. Number one, I've told you, if you go to office.com and download their Office 365, you can get a home license for up to 5 computers for $100 a year. And I've said, that's $20 a year. You get upgrades all the time. It's actually pretty dang good, if you ask my opinion. Well, they made more strides. You and I, Jay, said they need to get an individual subscription like that that's inexpensive and people would really dig it. Well, they're actually making strides there, too. The latest headline, Microsoft launches low-cost Office 365 prescription service. And the company's announcing a new cheaper option for individuals. It's $6.99 a month or $70 a year. Now, this is coming to the table big time because Google's been like $50 a year for their services. This gets close to matching that, Jay. And you know what? You get a richer offer experience with Microsoft. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, but is this is for Microsoft Office still for home users, right? This is not for the corporate business.
Correct.
User. Okay. So in that case, I have to say, for you're comparing the Google corporate price of $50 a year to Microsoft's home price. Google's home price is free. You know, if you want Gmail and Google Docs and all that stuff for the home user, it's free. There is no cost at all to it. So they're still a long way away, I think, personally, Microsoft.
And well, it's relative. It's relative. A long way away. It depends. If you work from home a lot and it's on your laptop that you use at work or you use at home, a lot of people are going to put this on their computer regardless. And so the world's emerging as everybody travels and what really is working from home and what really is the office. And so the lines are blurring.
I have seen.
And compared to free, it's a long way off. Compared to where Microsoft used to be, this is a huge second step in the right direction.
It is movement in the right direction. I totally agree. But I think that, and I see people install home versions in the office all the time. I'm just like, guys, you can't really do that. There's some problems there, but, so people do it. No doubt it happens, but I still think that Microsoft is a little ways off. Now I really like Microsoft's model of $100 a year and you can put it on 5 PCs for the home user. Basically what that means, if you actually put it on 5 PCs and you break down the math, that's $1.65 a month per computer to have Office on. And I think that's very reasonable. And I think if Microsoft could get that for every computer out there, we know that there's like a billion Windows PCs on the market today globally. And like 300,000 of that, 30% almost, is Windows XP still, but that's another story. But still, if you could get that on all these machines, I think Microsoft would be plenty happy to be bringing in $1.65 billion a month on
Office
product.
You can get three other places for the most part. I mean,
doubt. But, they do have this one that you're talking about here, and it's going to be $7 per month for a single user. You do get one copy for a tablet if you can, if you have one, and it's, of course, got to be a Microsoft tablet. But I still think they need to come down. They need to get that price maybe to $2.
Well, no matter what, though, Jay will want it free. And unless it's free, Jay will complain. But I'm telling you, it's a huge step in the right direction, and it's the step that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks. They're probably listening to TechWatch Radio, Jay.
It is a step in the right direction, and I don't want them to put it out for free. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you guys, you got to move closer to this. You've got so many good alternatives out there. Google Docs is one. LibreOffice is another. Is LibreOffice perfect? No, but is it worth, a couple $100 a year comparatively? Absolutely. And there's almost no reason to use Microsoft Office anymore, even in a corporate environment. It's not open source, so you can't trust the code. You know, you've got all these bugs and issues with it. I think Microsoft Office is going to be dead here in a couple of years if they don't do something huge. But I do applaud them. This is a move in the right direction. So in that, just like Sam is willing to give kudos to Google, I am to Microsoft when they move in the right direction.
All right. Now, Jay's right, though. I'm going to be the first to say Jay's right. They're on the right path, but they need to get more aggressive on that path.
Yes.
And what I think they should have done is they should have said, instead of $6.99 or $7, giving you $30 off if you do the single version versus the five, I think they should have basically said, look, $5 a month, $4.99, or $50 a year. And yeah, it would have been a little less money, but the adoption rate would be much quicker, and it would be a direct, in my opinion, deal with Google, because Google always just touted that $50 a year thing. And you match that,
yeah,
and now you're talking. Now, there's a big difference between home and office, but they could back their way into that fairly easy, too, and say, you know what? It applies to small business, too. We realize there's a home and business market, and there's a blur between the two, and people are working from anywhere. You know what? Unless you're in the corporate world with a business this big or small, you could say it's a benefit to small business in the booming economy. We love you, small business. You're the innovators of America. They could put together the most incredible marketing campaign around that, and I'm telling you, they would win big. They've got 2 million subscribers already on it, Jay, and they're hoping it'll grow, and I'm submitting if they do what me and Jay are saying, it would be 10 million instead of 2 almost overnight. It really would. I'm telling you.
And, you know, I think that behind the scenes, I don't know this, but it's just my hunch is that behind the scenes, Microsoft doesn't really care if people are using it in small home environments or, you know, the entrepreneur, one business guy kind of thing. They don't care so much. I think that they're just saying, hey, for these big corporate environments who can't afford it, who are locked into our software since like Office 95 or before, you know, hey, we want a premium from you guys. And that's what the Office, you know, the professional versions are about. It's just like the phone company. You know, you sell a landline to somebody for $30 a month, but oh, if you're a business, it's $45 a month now. Come on. You know, what's the difference, really?
Right.
And does business use tech support more? Probably not even, really. I mean, they might need quicker support.
Well, it's about when their usage. Stuff is like down. With phone bills, it's about how many long distance minutes and how intensive the use is. And when you're at home, the use is over to virtually a 24-hour period for the most part. When you're at work, it's in an 8-hour big block of usage. And so a lot of it has to do with peaks and stuff like that. But to make a long story short, I'm telling you, Microsoft could really bring in small business and really make a difference if they did exactly what they're doing now, but more of it. And the big debate is, if they slowly let go of Office, will they make more money? In other words, being forced to make small tweaks over time, but hold on to the cash cow, or would they be better off getting more aggressive and more innovative and losing some of the cash cow for a greater piece of the pie down the road? That's what I think they ought to do, and that's what they're so hesitant to do, because there's a lot of money on the line for that stuff. But I'm saying to them,
agreed,
if you want to be in the game going forward, you better reward customers, and it's about training the youth to be on your software is what a lot of it is about. And if you're not careful, Microsoft, you will hold on to that cash cow to your horrible detriment down the road when the youth are trained in Google, not Microsoft, or trained in LibreOffice, or not Microsoft. That's what the issue is. And so
that's true.
I'm telling them they better get a clue and they better do it fast. They're on the right road, but they better go further. And if they're listening to TechWatch Radio, which I hope they are because they're doing exactly what we said for them to do, they're just too hesitant to jump in with both feet. It's like they got one leg in the water. Come on, guys, get her done.
One toe
because you'll
in
be
the water.
Glad if you... You know, yeah, okay, all right, one toe. But exactly. You'll be glad if you do, because the next generation will be trained on your systems, not on others. And that's how you did so well for so long, even though you lost the innovative battle years ago. You've had everybody trained on your stuff, and it's been so hard for people to extract themselves. That is changing, I'm telling you right now.
It is. And, you know, that's why that Microsoft has such aggressive rates on their university stuff. I mean, I think you can buy a university copy of Office for like $60 or $65. And that's not per year. That's like an unlimited version. And I think it might even go for up to 5 computers or something. It's crazy how inexpensively compared the university and scholastic academia versions are comparatively. And it's just for that reason that you
versions.
Mentioned. Yeah. It's to get people hooked on it. So they know this and they're not willing to, you know, invest a lot of time into learning some alternatives. But there's one more point I want to just briefly touch on with this Office environment versus an open source solution. And that is, you know, we've seen all the stuff from Snowden and the NSA and everything hooks into all kinds of things like RSA encryption and where they pay people a lot of stuff. There's a lot of countries and governments and stuff that around the world are just going to say, you know, I don't want to use a United States solution that is not open source. And then in I think it's even probably in their best interest to use something that's open source where you can view the code, you can see what's going on. And so Microsoft is a little bit, you know, they've got a handicap there because they're closed source, because they're a United States vendor, because they may have, you know, hooks from other, you know, three-letter organizations in their software. We just don't know. And so they got to compete with that if they're going to compete with open source.
So bottom line is MickeySoft, we like it, we love it, we want some more of it. Get it done, the sooner the better. You need to play in the real world, and you're getting there, kind of. You're in the right road, but you're just not really ready to get on board completely. But I'm telling you right now, even if you get $70 a year on a single user for Office over a three-year period, that's $210, and that's more than you would have got if somebody would have bought your software, even in a boxed copy. Plus, you have no boxed or, you know, packaging costs or distribution costs in that regard, yep, except for the digital download side of things. I'm telling you right now, they found a way to make money. They better get more aggressive while they can. All right,
you know,
Jay,
and they also they one last thing, they think that. I think a lot of their stuff is in here is because of support. Maybe what they need to do is offer versions.
Well, support says, hey, this sucks, comes with, so that doesn't mean anything at all to me.
That's true, but it's also expensive for them. It doesn't matter that it sucks. It's a very expensive side of software is the support. Probably the most expensive side is the support. Offer a version that just doesn't come with support. Kind of like the open source. You know, it's like open source. You can go to a forum or whatever. There's no support. Offer a version of Microsoft where you don't get support or you pay for the support, like per incidence. And I think they could decrease the price dramatically, get it down to that $1.65 a month, software as a service where you just don't mind.
I agree, without question. I totally agree with that 1,000%. All right, you know, you think of dollar theaters as being kind of cheap, Jay, and on the watch a movie for a buck side, it certainly is.
Do they still have those dollar theaters?
Absolutely. Maybe not where you live, but where good, honest family folks wow. live, and they're not in the gator country. We got that stuff still here, Jay. So anyway, the interesting part about this, though, is that the world's changing. And no longer are people willing to watch analog movies on reel-to-reel. I mean, it's almost like black and white. Not as bad, but close, right? So everybody's right. going digital, and digital's the in thing, and you got to have, you know, higher quality screens and, you know, surround sound delivery. And the only way to really give people the delivery they expect now, because you've trained people with iPads and everything else to have nicer and nicer and nicer delivery. Well, anyway, we saw an article that came out that I thought was so fascinating that I thought I'd tell you about it. And the headline says, dollar movie theaters are embracing digital. And for a dollar movie theater to go digital costs between $60,000 and $100,000.
Wow.
Jay, that cost is outrageous. Just
you
got
to sell a lot of popcorn to make up for
well,
that.
Well, and that's the point. They only make their money on the concessions. All the movie companies take all the money from the movies. And it's yeah. kind of like a gas station that sells gas. They don't make any money on gas. They make money on the drinks and the pop or the Twinkies and
$5
whatever
gallon
buy.
Milk.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, well, the same thing's true with the concessions and the movie organizations. Well, I thought about this and I thought, man, I could put an incredible theater in my house for way cheaper than $60,000 to $100,000 that would
no
look
doubt.
Every bit as good as theirs. What's going on here? And I did a little digging, Jay. And the bottom line is it has to do with the formats and the delivery mechanisms in which these movie theaters are willing to deliver the content. And you've got to upgrade and go along with their plan. And if you don't, you simply can't play the movies. And it has to do with the control of the delivery of these movies more than it does the actual technological advancement to go digital.
That sounds exactly like a Hollywood solution. You know, just make it super expensive, lock down. You know, probably the motion picture associations involved and all that. They just shoot themselves in the foot. It's same with the recording industry and in music in general.
Agreed.
You know,
but here's the sad part. It might mean the death of the dollar movie theater, Jay.
You know what, though? It'll mean the birth, and we're already seeing it, of the home entertainment theater system where, you know, you can spend a tiny fraction of that amount and have huge, awesome experience at your own house.
Yeah, you can get a digital long throw projector. You can get yourself a hi-fi stereo system. You can put yourself some kind of a screen or a wall or something somewhere, and you can actually do just as well and even buy your own theater popcorn maker and still be, what, $10,000 at the most?
Better not charge your neighbors to watch movies, though.
Oh, no.
Hollywood will crack down
They'll
on you.
Clean your clock. Yes, sir. You'll go
yes,
to
they
jail.
Will. But you can get 4K TVs now, you know? And that's what they're playing. I mean, that's the native format in the real high-end movie theaters. So
I know.
I don't think they like these developments. But
all right,
again,
Bitcoin ATMs, Jay.
When are they going to have one in my area?
They're coming to the USA, buddy.
Okay, how do you, I know a lot about Bitcoin, but I still don't quite understand. How do you, if I buy a Bitcoin, so I put in some cash, I buy a Bitcoin at an ATM, what do I take a QR code shot of that? I mean, how do you transfer that huge number that goes with it, and how do you back that up and stuff? There's some things about Bitcoin that I just don't
Well, they're doing Bitcoins
have my
for
arms
cash,
around.
Jay. Not okay. Cash for Bitcoins. And so all you got to do is find a way on your computer to transfer that to your ATM and then get the cash.
I see now. So you put in your Bitcoin and then you get cash out.
Roger that. Not the other way around. And that's kind of the interesting thing. I think
that
this is designed to get people off Bitcoin.
Yeah, maybe so. And get people to cash out their Bitcoin. I'm sure they're charged some sort of differential rate there.
Anyway, I find that interesting. I wish it did Bitcoin to cash and cash to Bitcoin, or I wish it gave the ability for you and me, for example, to go to one of these machines and maybe transfer a Bitcoin if we don't have a computer with us. Anyway, they say the company that makes the machine says we're really excited about the community, and it's going to happen in Austin, Texas first. It's a fantastically central location, and the machine will scan a user's palm print and government-issued ID.
What?
And then let the user add money to a virtual digital wallet. And then that way you can withdraw the currency to your phone app or to cash or whatever. They'll also perform a one-time face recognition scan. So this is absolutely crazy in terms of its credential requirements, Jay.
That is very crazy. It's anti the whole Bitcoin community. How are they going to get anybody to use this and get and scan their palm print and use their government ID? And I mean,
and do a face
that's
recognition.
90% of the reason people use Bitcoin.
Well, you're right. Now, here's what's going to happen, though. They're going to basically roll them out. I bet they're going to fail. And they're going to say, Bitcoin is just kind of a failure.
I want to see gold to cash and cash to gold ATMs.
Amen to that. But I also think this. It's their implementation that's all wrong. They're going to act like the Bitcoin's a failure when it's truly not. It's their bogus implementation with lockdown control that's the problem. Same thing we've been talking about virtually this whole hour. It's all about control, Jay.
Indeed, sir. Indeed.
All right. Very strange stuff. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. Hopefully,
great show.
TechWatch Radio is entertaining and educational all at the same time. TechWatchRadio.com for archived downloads. Listen anytime on demand you like. If you want to get a hold of Sam and Jay, talk at TechWatchRadio.com. It all starts at TechWatchRadio.com. That's just a simple bottom line. All right, for Sam and Jay and the TechWatch crew, thanks so much. And make it a great tech day, will you?